Okay, everyone, let's make a start. Good evening, welcome to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Graham, I'm an alcoholic. And for those that would care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Remember, the person next to you might be listening to the meeting. Okay, this group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And we've got a real treat for you tonight. This evening we're discussing everyone's favourite steps 8 and 9 and the first part of those two steps. And so let's just get right into it. I'm going to kick off on page 76 tonight. 76, with the paragraph that starts, "Now we need more action." Okay. "Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We've made a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol." Ryan?
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
You know, it's funny, I was sitting here looking at this and I was reminded once again that these steps kind of require me to do the exact opposite of what I want to do and the exact opposite of how I live most of my life. Making amends, sweeping up the damage done in my past was not something that I had ever done before. I'm more of a kind of like ignore it and hope it goes away kind of gal. I'm more of a let me just disappear out of your life kind of gal. I didn't really get into fights or anything. I just stopped contacting you. If it was someone close to me, I kind of like to hang out in the background for a while. And it's like, is it safe to come out now? Are you not mad at me anymore? You know, but trying to make things right and admitting my wrongs definitely wasn't something that I had done before. It's pretty freaking intimidating if you ask me, which I think is why it reminds me that I agreed to go to any length in order to stay sober. And as far as the list, it says we made it when we took inventory. You hear stories in AA about people like burning their resentment list, which is probably folly because you're going to need it here. I actually did have a sponsor that had me burn my resentment inventory. I kind of had to like remake it then, all that list of people that I had harmed. But you're not supposed to do that, apparently. And so I did. I had the list, and I was ready to do it. It kind of came in stages. My first attempted amends, I kind of did the ones that were like kind of close to the heart, you know, parents and family and things like that. And it was definitely intimidating and a fearful experience, but I was definitely willing to do it. Thank you.
Reed. My name's Reed. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Reed.
I'm visiting here from Richmond. I'll say sobriety date and all that.
You can see whatever you like.
Okay. my sobriety date is March 5th, 2010. I have a home group, which is in the Fan in Richmond at Park and Meadow. It's a on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. So if you're ever in town, please come see us. And I have a sponsor, and I also sponsor Ben. I also, you know, I had a sponsor that did not have me destroy my fourth step, which was good. But I still had to do some work after, because there were people that I had to make amends to that weren't that I didn't necessarily have a resentment towards. Definitely was balked some. When it first came to making the amends, I was willing, very willing, to make the amends to my parents, because they have always been very supportive, and I just couldn't bring myself to ignore those amends. But there were some people that just magically appeared in my life, which I had a roommate that I had just generally screwed over, and he showed up at an AA meeting when I was like probably 9 months sober. It was a meeting I'd never went to. I didn't even know that he was sober. But, we sat down after the meeting, and I explained where I was wrong, and asked if there was anything else that I had forgotten about. And there were a few things. And, I told him, or I asked him, if there was anything else that I could do, and he said, no, just, you know, continue to stay sober. And that was pretty much it. Luckily there wasn't any money involved, so it was just kind of, I wasn't a good person to him. So,
okay, thank you. We'll read the next paragraph, still on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. Ryan.
Yeah, that talk of spiritual discoveries, You know, on the last time we went through these 12 steps, we got to these 9 steps amends. And I remember this guy sitting up here, and he was talking about the amends that he made and, like, what a textbook cases that they were. And I remember sitting in the audience and just thinking to myself and looking back at what a disaster my amends were and, like, how many ways I absolutely went wrong. I was kind of that fanatic and religious bore at least one time. I remember I had just gotten sober and I was so caught up in it and so excited about it. I emailed my, well, he was my husband at the time, but we were going through a divorce. And he had had a religious background. And I was very excited about all this God stuff, so I emailed him about how he should go back, if it did everything for him that it did for me, that he should definitely be getting back with God and stuff. He was a very nice guy and kind of wrote it off, but I did kind of do that a little bit. yeah, and it says our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service in the people about us. It's not so much about obtaining forgiveness. And I know when I got to AA, I felt incredibly guilty. I was just full of all this shame. I remember I didn't even want to face the world anymore. You know, leaving my bedroom was a very difficult and challenging thing for me because I was just so ashamed. And it turns out the reason I felt so guilty was because I was. You know, I was a person who most of my life I walked around completely oblivious to how my actions and my behaviors affected other people. I was so wrapped up what was going on with me and my problems and my hurts and my feelings and me, that I just didn't see it. You know, my husband, he later told me that he was afraid to come home at night because he didn't know what he was going to find. You know, is it going to be like semi-normal Ryan, or is it just going to be like this crazy drunken mess? And my mom, bless her heart, she got to see me the last 10 months that I was drinking, and in that 10 months she gained 30 pounds and went on antidepressants from dealing with me. And at this point, sorry was just not going to cut it anymore. You know what I mean? And that's where that sincere desire to set things right and a demonstration of goodwill comes in. This isn't about I'm sorry anymore. It's like, look, this is what I did. This is what I did. What can I do to make it right, like he mentioned? And leave out the spiritual discoveries. I only did it once. So, thank you.
My name's Reed. I'm an alcoholic.
You Reed.
First, I wasn't sure what the word diffident meant, so I had to look that up in the dictionary. I've got it written as shy, timid, or bashful. And you know, I when I was drinking, well, throughout my whole younger life, I was never religious or spiritual or anything like that. I was actually I had a big resentment against organized religion, and I made that very public to pretty much everyone that I knew. So it would have seemed really strange for me to come at someone with from a spiritual basis. So, you know, I didn't really have to worry about that, but I did really have to worry about how I put things when I talk to people. You know, my sponsor pretty much had to lay out exactly the words that I was going to say to a lot of the people, at least the first few amends that I made. I told me always be careful not to say things like I'm sorry I hurt your feelings, or it's like it's kind of belittling, you know. It's like putting the onus on them, essentially, you know. I'm sorry that your feelings got in the way of what I was doing. What I was saying, you know. So I've got to be very careful about how I phrase things. Even now, you know, I have a way of belittling when I don't mean to. And that's. But another thing in this paragraph is there's these little bits of just God speak, and our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That, I mean, that just sums up the whole program in itself, you know, what our ultimate goal is here. So that'll pass.
Thank you. Now we're going on to page 77. And we're just going to continue on with the paragraph that starts off with, "We don't use this," on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And, though we may have acquired a better attitude towards him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
Yeah, going to people we dislike, definitely not fun. There was really was only one big one on there. It was my ex-husband's sister. I was very angry with her because she had recommended repeatedly that my husband divorce me, and he ended up doing. And clearly it was his fault, her fault, that this happened, and it had absolutely nothing to do with how I was living. And she was not supportive of my marriage. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And I definitely was not too keen about talking to her. But I did do it. I tried to call her a couple times, and she wouldn't take my phone calls. Apparently, she was a little worried that I was going to make more trouble in that conversation. But I ended up doing something it recommends a little bit later in this chapter. I wrote her a letter. I wrote her a letter, and I really kind of stuck to this format. And it was helpful to me to understand what my part is, and that no, it was not her fault that I got a divorce. It was my fault. Mm-hmm. And I did just what it said. I recognized the fact that, one, she was looking out for her brother and trying to be caring and supportive towards him, and two, that it was my behavior. And I acknowledged that. And a really funny thing happened. This lady who did not like me and wouldn't even accept my phone call, she did. She wrote a letter back. And she appreciated what I had done. She sent me the Book of Mormon, and she wished me well. But I did. I did do it. I went to that person I didn't care for. I was very much a person who was told to go out and contact these people versus letting them come into my life. Make the effort is what I was told, and whether or not they reciprocate or even want to hear an amends from you, that's on them. So I did do that with her, that was fun. I love that Book of Mormon. Thank you.
Read alcoholic. I don't guess I don't have to say that every time, do I? So, yeah, I had a few people on my. Obviously, they were on my fourth step, so I definitely had some animosity towards a few people that I needed to make amends to, and. There was one guy, I pretty much grew up with him, known him since we were before teenagers, really started experimenting with things with him, with, you know, intoxication in various ways. And we kind of, we hung out all the way until I ended up getting sober. But throughout that, we kind of took turns screwing each other over, I guess. And I had when I got sober, I really started to feel those feelings of resentment that were hidden with the alcohol, and so I tried to contact him, and didn't have any luck, but I continued to, you know, it says we remained willing, and I prayed for him, like it says in the fourth or the fifth step, fifth step, where, remembering that these are sick people and that the way to get through resentments. And lo and behold, I ran into him at the gas station and was able to sit down with him and talk through the stuff. And I didn't get angry or upset or like I. typically did, you know. It didn't turn out quite as well as I would have hoped, but, you know, that's kind of the nature of it. It's not always going to go as well as we want, so, you know, that's life. But, you know, I can honestly say that I went with him with a helpful and forgiving spirit, you know, so that's as well as I could have done, I guess.
Okay, thanks. We're going to continue on page 77. Under no condition. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell them that we'll never get over drinking until we've done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we're calling on admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam.
Yeah, this is another area where I might have made a couple mistakes once or twice. You know, it talks about coming to people in that, like, calm, frank, and open manner. I wasn't necessarily always calm when I did these amends. There were several that I'm pretty sure I cried during. I was just such a wreck and such a ball of nerves. I feel kind of bad for them. They were probably very forgiving of me just because I was such a wreck. And not discussing the faults kind of messed that one up a little bit one time. I was making amends to my ex-husband, and he had cheated the last couple of months before he told me he wanted a divorce, and I wasn't too happy about that. And while I was making amends, he, like, apologized to me, and I might have had a thing or two to say about that. I later had a sponsor that had me remake amends to him, and at that point, it definitely was a calm, frank, and open manner. And a lot of those, I mean, are just, you know, with him, the big thing was that I got an opportunity to tell him it wasn't his fault, because I think he blamed himself a lot. And not only that, that's the big thing that was with a lot of folks, is that I just wasn't there for them, or I wasn't present in them for them. Kind of neglected a lot of relationships. But I never had a bad response to an amends. Nobody stayed angry with me. Nobody wanted to throw me out of the office. None of that jazz. Most folks were just what it says, praising what I was doing and wishing me well. You know, keep it up. I had a couple people who were like, I always knew something was wrong. And I was like, well, why didn't you tell me? No, I didn't actually say that. I might have thought it, but I didn't say it. But yeah, I was surprised. You know, I walked into almost all the amends with, like, a lot of fear and things like that, but it was always well received.
So. My first amends was to my mom, and I made the mistake of, I got a little upset and brought up the amount that she drinks, and I ended up making amends for that too. But, you know, we ended up sitting down and talking for like an hour and a half or something after that, and you know, I was never, you know, I was close to her when I was a kid, but once I hit like 12 or something, you know, I was off and just wasn't present for her, you know. And I that caused a lot of heartache for her, you know, and I didn't really even realize it, you know, just so selfish. But you know, we hashed all that out, and, you know, what I definitely owed her some money. So we got a figure that I'm working on. And, you know, all the stuff with how I hurt her, though, there's not, you know, saying I'm sorry isn't going to do anything. So, you know, I have to continue to stay sober and continue to be present for her and my dad, you know, and just, you know, not be a jerk, you know. That's basically what it is. For my other amends, you know, I, like you were saying, people said that they knew you had a problem. You know, the majority of the people that I went to were extremely happy to see that I had quit drinking. It was, it made it a lot easier. They were very willing to do whatever they could to help me do whatever, you know, and with the exception of the guy I spoke about previously. But, yeah, it's almost, I don't know, I'm almost thankful that I was just such a maniac, because it made the events a little easier, you know, in a way. So, yeah.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to continue on page 78 now, with most alcoholics owe money. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them.
Yeah, I got off fairly easy when it came to money. I didn't have any debt when I got sober. I don't know, I had a job since I was 16, and I was always fiercely independent. And then later on, when I couldn't work, I had a husband to pay the bills. So, but I did have some items of theft that I had to deal with. I remember when I was young, I think it's UNICEF, I don't know. You see those commercials, and I got the little box, and I went from house to house to house, and I collected the money, and then I got all the money together, and it seemed like too much effort to spend it, or to send it in, so I just like kept it and spent it. So I ended up calling UNICEF and telling them that, you know, 20 or so years ago, I collected, you know, about $50 for you, and I'd like to give it to you guys now, and they let me mail it in. The only, yeah, I don't know, simple. I'm sure they thought I was crazy when I called, but hey, gotta do it. The other big one was I had stolen some booze from a grocery store, and it's funny, once again, I probably could have paid for it, but it was like after midnight, so they wouldn't sell it to me, and I just remember walking into that store and like going down the booze aisle and looking at the camera and saying, there's no way anybody is watching that. So I just like put it in my purse and left. And so I had to go back. I just asked to talk to a manager and told her, hey, I stole some booze from you and I'd like to pay for it now. I wasn't too worried about cops or stuff. It was petty theft. But so I just paid it back. And that was kind of the extent of financial harms. The only other one was I had backed into a car once and drove away, and so my sponsor was like, well, what's your insurance deductible? I'm like, $500. And it's like, okay, you got $500 just going into the local pink can for literature for jails, AA literature for jails. So that was kind of the extent of my my financial amends. I feel kind of lucky on that one.
Well, I was not so lucky. I was always kind of a deadbeat with bills, but about a year and a half before I got sober, I decided to stop paying all my bills, I kept a job the whole time, but I, you know, the money had better uses than bills or rent or any of that stuff. So I lived in my truck and couch surfed when I could, but for the majority of the time I slept in my truck. And I racked up a pretty big, I also got evicted from the last place I lived where I was on the lease. So, you know, I've heard bigger sums. It was about $7,000 that I owed. I have brought that, I'm down to about 1,500 now. I've paid off all the smaller ones. I started small with what I could. And then the big one was the landlord, right? Had gotten evicted. There was another guy on the lease too, and I have no idea where he is. So there was no way for when I spoke to the landlord to figure it out, there was no way to divide up the amount. So I'm just paying the whole thing. That was about $3,600, and I've been paying monthly on that for a little over a year now, and gotten that down pretty quickly. So, you know, I remember when I first heard people talking about financial amends and the release they got from mailing in a check. I was like, there's no way. That I hate getting rid of money, and I'm terrible with money, but I don't know. I've got a weird thing that I'm dealing with money. But I'm still waiting for the ninth step promises to come true, I'll say. But, you know, I've got faith that it will be removed, you know, and I'm just doing the next thing, you know. I know I've got to if I want to stay sober. So.
Thank you. Okay, and now we're going to read a paragraph on page 79. And it's the paragraph that begins, although these reparations. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we've decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
Yeah, my amends kind of hit two batches. I did the when I first came in, I did the first set of amends, which was once again very much the family I was concerned with. Those ones that I didn't realize at the time, but kind of would immediately benefit me in a lot of ways. And then I largely got distracted by like life and AA and things that were going on in my head. Who knows? And the amends just kind of fell off. And I remember being right around a year. I was not doing so hot. I was feeling very crazy. I was like driving home, thinking about putting in my car into a wall, like all kinds of crazy stuff. And I had a sponsor that like reintroduced me to the steps, and we hit this amends again. And then all of a sudden I'm confronted with the ones that I didn't really want to do or that I didn't want to care about. And I know there was just one in particular that I had known that I had needed to do, but I was putting it off. It's because I was worried about losing my reputation. I had worked at a bookstore and for a lot of years, and this lady was boss. I absolutely loved her. I was well-respected at that company. I was well-liked at that company, and I had to make amends there. I had stolen some books from that store, and then just general, you know, I was frequently late, and there were a couple of other things, and I really did not want to go to this woman, you know, who thought so well of me and admit that I had done things wrong. It was actually pretty terrifying. But like I said, at a year sober, I'm starting to get suicidal again, and so all of a sudden I've got this willingness to face up to this amends that I don't want to do. And I did. I walked in there, and we sat down and had a conversation. And once again, it was just admitting what I had done wrong. And with a you know, what can I do to make this right? And it was very surprising. Apparently her father had been in AA. She was like, once again, you know, I knew something wasn't right. I remember the last little three week drunk that I had gone on, I had missed a day of work. And I called her actually the next day because there was no call out, there was nothing. I just wasn't there. And I called her the next day, and you guys had given me a great excuse for not being there, that I had had an allergic reaction and ended up in the hospital. And I remember that conversation because she's like, well, was it something they're taking or putting into you, or is it something they're taking out? I don't know. But anyhow, so she kind of had a clue that something was going on, and she was very gracious about it and very forgiving. She would actually be so it went far better than I had expected. You know, we'll still chat today if I go into that store. It wasn't near the crisis that I had made up in my head. But not all amends have worked out, you know, the way that I had hoped to be or the way that I thought that they should be. I remember my dad and I, we were never close. My parents split when I was two, so we were never close. So I'm going to do these, like, amends to my dad, and all of a sudden we're going to have this, like, magical, beautiful relationship, you know. And so the daughterly thing to do is to start calling him every week, you know. And so I do. I start calling this guy every week, and about a month and a half in, he's going, Ryan, you don't need to call me this much. You know how I am. I'm not a big talker, and you know. And instantly, like, the old resentment come back, and I'm like, fine. So, you know, I make an effort to call him, and it's just not producing the result that I want. And it goes by the wayside. And then I had an opportunity to go see him about a week and a half ago. And once again, I'm going to be in this uncomfortable situation because we don't have the relationship that I want to have. And we're going through the weekend and whatever it is. And then the night before I leave, my dad sits down next to me and he looks at me and he says, Ryan, you know, I've always wished that we had a closer relationship, you know, and that we could communicate more. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, you know, after 34 years now, you want this? And it could have been a very nice moment, but it just wasn't. I was kind of like nodding my head like, yeah, okay, this is awkward. Can we get it done and over with? But what happened was I recognized the fact that I need to once again make more of an effort to include my father in my life. You know, I didn't necessarily handle it appropriately then, but the next day, you know, I go home from Virginia and I'm like sending my mom the latest text message update, and I'm like, oh, this is a good opportunity to include my father and to start to build that relationship that clearly he does want. And for me, I know it's a silly one to have to be willing to go to any lengths with that one, but I really do. I don't know why, but that particular one is just very difficult for me even to this day. So it's an opportunity for growth for me.
I had similar experiences. I've had a few similar experiences going through a tough time. You know, not really feeling the whole AA thing or whatever, and then all of a sudden someone shows up that I need to make amends to, and it kind of just starts the ball rolling again. I've had that happen a few times. It's almost like similar thing, someone asks you to sponsor them. You know, it's pretty cool. God always provides what I need when I need it. This prayer is essentially what it is. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. You know, I've had to tell myself that before each amends that I've made. You know, I did not have any amends that I that risked me going to jail. I actually got sober as a result of going to jail. I spent 6 weeks in Richmond City Jail, and that was what finally told me that I had had enough, or when I came to that realization. So I didn't have any criminal things, but you know, the personal consequence of even getting my feelings hurt or something like that. You know, I've just stand strong, you know. I Well, yeah, I don't think I've got anything else.
Okay, thank you. And I think, you know, for what it's worth, this is a really popular time to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. Either step four, when I realize that I'm going to have to make the amends because I'm smart and I can read down to nine, or when I actually get into these amends, it's very easy to just fade away. And we see this all the time. We see people leaving round about step nine. And my own experience with that was that when I came to AA initially, I was in so much pain and so screwed up that I kind of, my sponsor just got me right into the steps as soon as I came to AA. And I was making the amends. I got sober on October the 19th. I was making amends by December. We just did step work together. He told me that's how you get better from alcoholism. You have to do the steps. If you don't do the steps, you'll drink again. It's going to happen. You're an alcoholic. You need to do the steps. So I started making these amends with a lot of gusto, like these two said. And, you know, there was a lot of people I ripped off. They had to be paid back. Some people couldn't be seen. I wrote them letters. I was living in Japan at the time. I didn't grow up there. So I had to do that. And I got a lot of relief from that. But here's the stinger for me. I have alcoholism. And I have continued in sobriety to do stuff to people, to be resentful, and to behave badly at times, resulting in hurting people, then necessitating more amends. And those have been much more difficult for me to make than those initial ones. Because to some extent, you can, even if I'm not saying to the person, I only did that because I was wasted. You know, I was full of alcoholism. What do you say when you've been sober 10 years? You stole something off somebody, or you told a big whopper, or you cheated or lied? What do you do then? What if that's who you are? What if you're still flawed and morally imperfect after all these years in AA? And those are the amends that I've really at times been stuck on step 8.5. You know, I can sit down and do an inventory. Let's do it right now. Let's get some paper. We'll do an inventory, baby. I bet mine's is better than yours. Better it is. I'm really good. I had once had a sponsor tell me, Graham, you're great at doing inventory. And I was like, yes. But that's just talking to some guy in AA and God, you know, in step five. And step nine is sitting across from people. Most, and did I tell you, I don't like people. You know, I don't know, really, I don't. I'm not kidding, I don't like people. And now I have to sit across from one of these people and pony up this admission of wrongdoing. And, you know, so that has been very difficult. I have a lot of pride. I really do. And I loved what Ryan said. I'm the same. I'll just shut you out my life and just pretend you never existed and it didn't happen. And a favorite one of mine is to move. And if you move continent, those people are like 3,000 miles away. So that's that. It's like that never even happened. Not that I ran away from anything in Scotland. Not that that's what went on. But so the point I'm trying to make is that these amends, it's very important for me to do this. Why do I have to make these amends? I have to make these amends because resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. And I continue to make resentments toward people. And really what resentment lets me do is it lets me to continue behave badly. If I'm resentful at you, then I can justify treating you badly. If I make amends to you and humble myself, then it's more difficult for me to justify that. So this is very much necessary for me, but what I've found is the longer I've been sober, it's been difficult at times to swallow my pride and make these amends. And I'll shut up with this. The most difficult ones for me to make are amends when the person has done me wrong. Sometimes they've done me more wrong than I've done them. And one that plagued me for several years in sobriety was my sweet old next door neighbor. And she's a sweet old lady, and her husband has dementia, and her family don't really come round to visit her anymore. She's very isolated in that house. And I'm her next door neighbor, and we had a nice relationship. I used to help take the groceries in from her car, and I tried to be a good neighbor. And this probably about 10 years sober when we moved in next door to this lady. So anyway, I love gardening, and there's a fence that joins on the property. And I asked her permission, and she said it was fine, and I spent some money and planted all these beautiful climbing plants, and they climbed all over the fence between our property, beautiful plants, jasmine and honeysuckle and the like. So she hires this new gardener, and I come back from work one day, and it becomes apparent to me that someone's been in my yard and has ripped out all those plants, ripped them all away like they were never there, and there's items from my garden in her garden, like garden decorations that are mine, but they're now in her yard. And she's standing in the yard, admiring her new garden. And my reaction was not gentlemanly. And so I managed to remove myself from that situation, but then a couple of weeks later I see her gardener on my property with a weed whacker headed for walking down my drive. And my parents were there from Scotland, and boom, I flew out the house. Get off my property. He replied with some French, and he threatened to kill me, I believe, and I called the police. And the police came, and he had some warrants out, and they took him away, and my neighbor's standing crying, and all the other neighbors are out. And what I've done just in the last couple of minutes is I've got you on my side, and you're all thinking, that neighbor, what a horrible person. Poor Graham, how could she treat him that way? Graham's so nice, he's got that nice accent, he's such a nice guy, he's such a sweet man, and how could she treat him like that? And see, that's what I do, I love to get people on my side as I build my case against the offender. And so what happened is I'm now not sleeping at night because I want to get her. She continues to employ that gardener to this day. He was outside my house on Saturday with blowing the leaves, looking at my window. Yeah, she got some of her other friends in the neighborhood to hire him because they felt bad. So now this guy's there all the time. And I'm driving home from work and I see the truck and it starts up in my head. I want to kill that guy. Who does he think he is coming on my street? That old cow, who does she think she is? I'm going to, you know, And this is at 10, 11, 12 years sober. And I'm talking to guys in the AA about it, and I have to do inventory on it eventually. And the upshot of it is I end up on the lady's porch making amends to her. And I have to tell you, when I made amends to her, I didn't really even believe I did anything wrong. I think what I did wrong is I overreacted somewhat. But, you know, I don't want to live with her in my head all the time and maybe get drunk because of my next door neighbour. That's how serious this is. I'm in the shower, my next door neighbour and the gardener are in the shower with me. I'm with my wife and kids, my next door neighbour and the gardener are playing with us in the backyard. Every time I go outside the house, I think about wanting to kill her. So, welcome to my mind. And that's the problem with resentment. And the only way that I can seem to get any relief from that is to talk to guys in AA about it and pray about it and do some kind of inventory and then face up to the person and swallow my pride. And I went on the porch and said, you know, I was wrong. I felt resentful towards you. I regret not being a good neighbor, you know. And she didn't really accept the amend. She was pretty ungracious, whatever. And I still don't have a warm fuzzy, you know. She's not sending Christmas cards to us. But, you know, I showed up in front of her, like they said, and I tried to make things right and say that I was wrong to behave the way that I behaved and to hold on to it for so long, you know. To hold on to it and ignore her and all the things that I did to try and punish her. So anyway, welcome to Graham's world. So I still have the capacity to do that. And the great thing about this here is it really gives me a way to swallow my pride and face up to these things once and for all on an ongoing basis so that I can keep clean and not have to go back to drinking again. Because resentment is poison to me. It's absolutely poison. And it all comes back to me thinking that I'm right and you're wrong. And I have to be willing at some point to let that go. Because otherwise, what am I doing in AA? I'm just waiting. I'm just sitting here full of resentment and waiting. So anyway, I'm no stranger to resentment, and I don't like making amends. And if you're sitting on step 8.5, welcome to AA. Look around. AA is full of people on step 8.5. And if they're not talking about it, that's fine. The pain of being on step 8.5 is going to push me in one of two directions. It's going to push me out the door, or it's going to push me back into the steps, and back into trying to get a deeper relationship with whatever God is through AA. That's my experience, for what it's worth. Anyway, so that brings us to the end of that part of the meeting. Do either of you two want to say anything else? There's still 4 minutes left before we wind the meeting up. Okay. I'll take that as a no. So, I'll thank Ryan for sharing with us tonight, and Reed for coming all the way down from Richmond to share his experience, strength and hope with us. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to pass these three baskets for the seventh tradition. Thank you. And the seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup and central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this point, are there any AA-related announcements? We've got one, January the 13th in this room, starting at 6 o'clock, free food. That's right, it's food and it's free. And it's in this room at 6 o'clock on Monday, January the 13th. And we've got a guy called Jerry Weaver coming down to talk. And it's our supper and speaker event. And Jerry will be kicking off at 7 o'clock and talking till 8. Everybody's welcome. And there's flyers on the table right there, the little green flyers. Thank you. Any other AA-related announcements? Danny?
I'm not alcoholic. My name's Danny.
Hi.
The DISC-EPOC, Virginia State Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, is coming to Virginia Beach in 2014. It's going to be the end of May, which is also June 1st, is that Sunday. But that's a ways off. We're having an anonymity ball on December 31st. It's going to be at Doors Open Today, speaker from 8:30 to 9:30, followed by a masquerade ball type thing up in Hampton. 99 East Mercury Boulevard is the address. If you want more information on that, see me at the meeting.
Thanks, Danny.
Thank you.
Lydia.
Hi, my name is Lydia. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lydia.
December 19th at 5:30, Ailish will be sharing her experience, strength, and hope at the ODU meeting, 49th Street Living Sober. Please come join us for Ailish and some cake and cookies for no reason.
Thank you. So that's on December, Thursday, December the 19th at 5:30. Kathy.
I'm for Friday. We're not a long group.
Ooh.
So if anybody's out that way and you're hungry, the meeting from 1 to 2, if you show up to 2, that's when we're going to start eating. So it's on Lasting Road at
Eastern Shore Chapel.
It's the Eastern Shore Chapel.
Okay. Is that like a potluck?
The group is climbing.
Wow. Okay. So when's that? That's Friday.
This Friday.
That's Friday. Great. And, you know, I'm sure, I don't have the exact details, but I'm sure there's like an Alcathon on December the 31st somewhere. Is there one down at the oceanfront? See the Harmony. You know, if I know the first few years I was sober, being around people in AA through the Christmas and New Year period, on New Year's Eve especially, was very instrumental in me not drinking those nights. So that's available if you need it. It's in the Harmony, which is the little magazine on the table. Any other announcements?
Robin Alcoholic.
Hey, Robin.
Oasis is going to have their annual
Christmas eating meeting as speaker. 6:30, the 27th of December, Friday. Evening starts at 6:30, and speaker Iran Pete is speaking at 8 o'clock. Oasis. I'll be a flyer next week.
That's great. And where is that, Robin? I'm sorry.
It's on Halpern Drive.
Okay. Little Creek in Halpern.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Any other announcements? Okay, great. Thanks, everyone. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise a hand. Thank you. Newcomers, is there anyone in the first 30 days of sobriety who would like to welcome you? No? Okay. Literature's available, and it's on this table here at the front. It's a glass table at the front. There's a nice display of literature there. If you need any literature, please see one of the home group members after the meeting. And sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. And would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise their hand. So if you're interested in getting a sponsor, or you just want to ask what sponsorship is or what it involves, please see one of these people after the meeting. If you don't like the look of any of them, then, you know, the three of us will be down here after the meeting. You can come and talk to us. We'd be happy to get you a sponsor if you're too shy to ask, or even just explain what it's about. We really can't stress the importance of getting a sponsor and working the steps with a sponsor as an integral part of staying sober. So in closing, thanks to Ryan and Reed, especially Reed coming all the way from Richmond to share with us tonight. Thank you. And after we clean up, everyone's invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. Everyone's welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at a Mexican restaurant, which is hidden away on Colonial and 22nd Street. It's called Plaza del Sol, which I think means the something. I can't remember. I'm sorry for the translation. I'll get it for next week. But anyway, you should come there. It's a lot of fun. There's Mexican food. There's a charming waitress, and you guys. There's chips as well. So please come along if you'd like. And even if you don't want something to eat, they do provide chips and water. But sometimes they confront people who are eating them and not paying. So just run the risk. Good times. Anyway, enough from me. Is anyone going to read the last two paragraphs on page 164 so we can finish the meeting? Who's going to do that? Kathleen, you ready? Oh, Justin, go on, nice and loud. Yeah, the last two paragraphs on 164. Thanks for reading, Justin. And for those that care to join us, we're going to close the meeting in a circle with the Lord's Prayer. Thank you.
Trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation,
but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thanks.